Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck, buddies? What the fuck, Nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Coming in for landing, people. Couple months left. I hope everybody's all right. How are you? Are you all right? Are you all right? Hello. Hello. You look all right. You'll get through it. I am personally not at home. I imagine some of you can hear that. Some of you more sensitive to the sound quality of the show probably know that I'm not home by now, but no longer complain about it because why? Why bother? Huh? But I am in New York. I've been here for a few days. This is sort of the end of this massive press journey for both The Bad Guys 2, which opens this Friday, tomorrow. Also for Panicked, my HBO special, which drops tomorrow. And, you know, a lot of attention on the closing up of the podcast and on these two projects. And it's just been a massive press. Just a full press of press. Does that make sense? Am I using the sporting analogy right? Full court press of press. Is that better? Look, I'm a team player. I'll get out there. I'll shill for the movie. It's a good movie. It's an exciting movie. It's great animation. It's got a great pace. It's got a fun story. It's got fun characters. But there is sort of a ceiling to how much you can make press about an animated film interesting, as far as I can tell. I mean, as an actor, and I'm up there with Danielle Brooks and Rockwell and Natasha, Maria, Craig Robinson's there, Anthony Ramos. And, you know, you're doing a lot of these. You'll sit in a room and you'll do 20 of them, you know, 5-minute hits, 10-minute hits with journalists from all different outlets. And I'm not saying they're not doing their job and we're doing our job. But I mean, after you field the question, like, if you weren't a snake, what animal would you be and why? And as a snake, you know, what are you thinking? How do you get into character for a snake? And if you watch Seth Meyers from last night, I addressed that. And I said, well, basically, this is my voice as me. And now I'm the snake. I'm doing it. It all comes right there. So that gets a little exhausting. But I think people had fun with it. And I don't even know where half of them are seen. And you do some of these press things. It's like, where is this going to be? And they're like, it's on a thing and a thing and in a place. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's good. Today, Awkwafina is here. She's an interesting character and very funny and has had kind of an interesting way of kind of moving through show business. She's in the Bad Guys movies with me. She plays the spider. What's the name? She plays Webs. And I think the first time I really met her was doing press and promotional stuff. And she's also an Emmy winner and a Golden Globe Award winner. But she did, you know, she won that Golden Globe for a very serious movie, The Farewell. And, you know, she kind of reached deep, and I don't think she's had a lot of acting training. But so anyway, she's here. Good conversation. Tonight I'll be at the 92nd Street Y here in New York City in conversation with Jim Gaffigan after a screening of my HBO special, Mark Maron Panicked. I don't know if there's tickets left, but you can check WTFpod.com/tour for tickets. And as I mentioned earlier, the special premieres on HBO this Friday and on HBO Max as well. And so does The Bad Guy. So it's going to be, you know, what are you going to go see? It's up to you. Which Mark do you want to engage with? But I think what's at the front of my mind, and I think that some of you in your emails have kind of sensed it. It's very interesting about the end of the show because almost everybody is like, you know, sorry, it's happening. I'm sad to see you go, but I get it. And a lot of you have been on this weird journey with me and my life through all these episodes, through all these years, and that you sense that I've arrived at a different place, and it's not a bad place. no matter how much I engage with or experience the anxiety that I've been experiencing over the last couple of weeks for any number of reasons. But I think you have actually seen the evolution of me kind of landing in myself in a new way. And I've noticed it myself. I want you to know that I do take note. I am writing things down about ways that I am kind of, it's not even gratitude. It's just like, hey, you did a good job on that. Or, hey, you know what? You didn't worry about your pants. You know, those boots are fine. Like there's a self-talk involved, but mostly it happens afterwards where I do something and I'm like, holy shit, I'm pretty good at this. And that's kind of new. This is going to sound a little crazy. I told you about that, the singing I did the other night at Largo of the Taylor Swift song. And I don't know if this seems weird or you're going to, you know, think I'm a dick for it, but I think I've watched that clip upwards of 20 or 30 times. I just sit and watch me singing that song. And I'm thinking like, dude, you know, you did all right. And I just keep watching it. Is that weird? Is that narcissistic? Or is it me just going, hey, if you're not hearing it from other people, hear it from yourself. And, you know, when you talk to somebody else, it's like, oh, I love that thing. You know, I watched it like 20 times. I'm like, yeah, me too. And it's me. So I don't think that's a bad thing, is it? But one of the ways I notice it the most is in these, you know, these panels or talk shows, sometimes on other people's podcasts. There is a sense of the real thing that drove me for a lot of years was just, I really wanted to be good. I wanted, you know, people to laugh at what I thought was funny, but I was driven by a certain fear, by a certain panic. There was a lot riding on it. I was always one of these people that, you know, I could only go one way and that was all in. And if that didn't work, you know, I'd be like, oh my God, you know, this means I'm terrible, or I don't know what I'm doing, or I suck, or maybe people just don't get me or whatever. But what I realize now, because I just did Seth Meyers last night, is that I was really, you know, full of panic, that like at my core, you know, I wasn't being a character when I was all worked up. I was all worked up. I wasn't being a character when I was angry about something. I wasn't being a character where I was being cocky about a particular, issue or a person that I was talking about comedically. I was really feeling all those things, and really those things as a subtext, not an enjoyable listen. Not necessarily an enjoyable watch. If you sense that somebody is really, I wouldn't say desperate, but trying really hard, and also being a bit dark and a bit weird, it's not going to land great. And now I'm still that guy, but I don't give as much of a fuck, and I am pretty comfortable, very comfortable in my abilities, and I think I'm just sort of realizing that and living in it. And it's kind of good. And I don't know what to do with those feelings. You know, like I talked to you about the, you know, that panel, you know, and like how I landed some pretty funny jokes, and they were very intentional. And I thought about them in the moment, and I decided to execute them, and they landed. And it was like, God, I'm pretty good at this. But I don't know if you can appreciate that. I've been doing this 40 years. And, you know, the ratio in terms of how many times I said, well, that sucked, or I suck, or this sucked, versus how many times I said, that was good, I did good, and whatever. It's very small on the I did good side. But I did Seth last night, and, you know, I've been in that studio my entire professional life. I used to do Conan. I started doing Conan O'Brien probably in 1996. I think it was probably my first network stand-up appearance was on Conan, and I did two of those. And then I did panel for the next, you know, 20 years. And every time, whatever chemistry Conan and I had that evolved, which was like, here comes Mark, he's worked up about something, he's going to alienate the audience or whatever. I didn't love that, but it gave, you know, him a point of view on it. But I didn't intend to do that ever. I really thought I'd come out and kill. And then, like, I wouldn't. And then he'd be like, here we go. You did it again. You dug a hole. And I'm like, instead of saying, you know, I didn't want to, I really thought that would like kill. I would go like, I know, I'm that guy. I'm the dig a hole guy. But going back for Seth and being in that building, you know, I always liked going to Conan. I liked being part of that part of show business and being, you know, Pamela Anderson is on the show with me and I got to like say hi to her and tell her she did a great job in The Last Showgirl, and I never met her before. And, you know, I like the whole process of gearing up to do a late night shot, but I didn't have, something happened on the special, which you can watch on Friday, Panicked on HBO and HBO Max, where it was really the first time where I was, you know, fully, not so much, it wasn't about being in control, but I was okay with myself and grounded. You know, I'd done all the work leading up to it, and I just felt really comfortable and excited to do it and ready to do it. And that's a rare thing for me, you know, historically. But I did feel it. I felt the shift. I don't know if it's getting older or giving less fucks or just, you know, finally realizing, you know, that I put my whole life into this particular form, into this craft. And I kind of felt it with From Bleak to Dark a bit, but like, you know, like I'm good at this and I do it exactly the way I want to do it. But that confidence is kind of like spreading inside me, which is not a bad thing. It's okay when confidence spreads, as long as you don't get too cocky. I try not to get cocky and I just keep it inside, you know, in terms of what you don't want to be, because like there is part of me, you know, when you fail, you kind of look for some sort of reassurance, you know, from friends or whatever, like that was pretty good, right? And they're like, yeah, it was pretty good. And you still know, it's almost like reaffirming the fact that it did suck as bad as you thought it did, but they're trying to be nice. But when I feel like I did good, I do the same thing. I'm like, that was fucking great, right? And there's nothing more annoying than that. Some guy like just can't shut up about how good it was. So I'm keeping that inside. But I do Seth. And just going out there and knowing him, and he's a particularly nice guy. And he is very good at his job right now. And he's a very good writer. And he knows comedy. But I just went out there and we had a loose kind of framework of it. But my freedom of mind to just be funny without overthinking it is new to me, and it's happening now. And I'm almost 62 years old, that it's all sort of coming together for me, you know, not professionally, it is that as well, but for me as a performer and as a guy who does a thing that he's been doing his whole life, I finally feel kind of locked in. That's a long haul, man. That's like 40 years of development to arrive here. Look, not complaining. I don't know if I could have handled it any other time, and obviously I wasn't prepared to, but it did feel good to be out there and really be loose, but also just have this strange new thing to me, which is I can be funny in the moment in a way that isn't like, oh, Jesus, what did he just say? But just kind of roll with it, and it's kind of great. I guess what I'm trying to say, and it's obviously very hard for me to say it, is that I might be enjoying myself doing what I've done my entire life, maybe for the first time in this way. There you go. I said it. Don't tell anybody. But that seems to be happening. And it was funny though, because I'm walking out and there's always like these guys who stand around and want you to sign things. And the assumption is like, yeah, they're just going to sell it on eBay. But I never really understood, like, how much could you really get of me, of a picture of me from The Joker, where I did like, you know, one scene. I mean, I guess some of them are just collecting them, or maybe, you know, kind of storing them away for when I really hit. You know, sometimes it's glow, sometimes it's bad guys or whatever. You know, but now they come up to you and they've just got a blank piece of photo, you know, paper that I guess you put in a photo printer, and it's just blank. And you just sign it, and then you don't know what picture they're going to put in there. So I said to one of the guys, I'm like, all right, I hope you put something good in there. What are you going to put in there? And he goes, glow. And I'm like, is that the moneymaker? He goes, I don't know. I'm like, all right, well, that was a tremendous arc from me feeling tremendously good about myself and successful. But hey, do what you can. I hope it makes you a few bucks. So Awkwafina is here. And again, this is really the first time we've actually talked, and it was great. It was interesting. And she's in The Bad Guys too, and that's in theaters tomorrow. And this is me talking to Awkwafina.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
What I miss, are y'all hungover? Are you a mess?
No, I'm not really.
No?
No.
What did I miss last night? I just had to go. I couldn't stay for the premiere. I just did the carpet because I did a music gig.
Oh yeah, right. You were telling us. Was that?
It was great. It was the best one.
Cool.
I kind of felt bad, though. I don't want to be looked at as like not a team player or something.
Why? What do you mean?
Like I didn't hang out and do the parties.
No. Don't worry about that. Yeah. I think everyone was kind of tired. I don't think a lot of people went to the after party, so yeah.
But who was supposed to go? Who was like who ran it? Was it DreamWorks?
I guess it was. Yeah, it was really good. I went and I downed like a whole. You know how they bring like a sample plate?
Yeah. And you just ate you just had food and got out.
Yeah,
there?
I chilled for a second, said hi to some people.
I don't think I've ever set foot in the chateau.
Oh, you! I didn't go to the chateau.
Oh, you didn't?
Yeah. No, I think maybe Craig stopped by. You never went to the chateau?
I went like once a million years ago. I drive by it all the time. I don't know what it is, why I have an aversion to it, because it's so cool. I just don't go.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Have you spent time there?
I started spending time there because I go to like events and like parties a lot.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Is it as nice as a, is it cool?
It's very cool.
Yeah.
You can really
hang out,
get a sense of the history there. And
yeah.
The days of yore, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Old timey Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, not, you know, 70s maybe. Yeah.
Well, yeah, there was that, but I feel like it's been there for a long time. I don't really know the whole history of it.
You should go hang out there.
Did you watch a movie last night?
Yeah. Yeah,
and how this is the first time you saw the whole thing?
It was good. Your character is like insane in it.
It's good?
Yeah. No,
oh,
it's so good. Yeah.
Oh, good.
No, it played really well.
Yeah.
You and Natasha's relationship was
cute.
So toxic.
Oh, really? Oh yeah. definitely. But it was cute.
Yeah, you got a lot of laughs.
Oh good. Yeah, got the laughs. Sure. How'd you do with the laughs? Good?
They were, you know,
good enough?
They got some chuckles here and there.
Who got the big laughs? Craig?
Craig got some big laughs.
Anthony?
Anthony got some. Your character definitely did when he's like with the yoga and stuff.
Oh,
that was hilarious.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, you guys for sure.
It's so weird, isn't it? Animation.
It is.
Have you done them before?
I've done quite a few.
Yeah. And it feels like it's not really happening until they put the movie up.
Yeah, you're just kind of like
you just go to this place for an hour or two,
right.
Do the thing.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, it's 10 minutes from my house.
Yeah, that's always great.
But it was fucking crazy. And I can't even sense it, like how it's going to come together or what.
No.
But
yeah.
I think it's going to be big.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's already a huge franchise. Kids love like
they love it, right?
The books,
yeah,
and the movies,
yeah.
But it was a big event yesterday.
It was.
Yeah, that was
shut
big.
Down Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, it's always nice.
So I feel like generationally we're a different age, and you seem to have this whole life and career, and I somehow it got away from me because I'm an old man. Is that possible? Like, you know, when you first became huge, I feel like what year was that? With the rap, with the My Vag.
Oh, My Vag. That was probably 2011, 2012. Yeah.
And it was like, it wasn't on my radar. And now, like, when I meet you and I met you before, I realized like, you're this huge presence. And I, like, how did I miss everything?
Yeah, no, I don't. You're a lot of people missed My Vag. So, you know.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. So
it's pretty important culturally. It's a culturally historic moment.
It is a historic. It's a landmark of a song. Yeah, I'm performing it at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Come on.
But yeah, I think everyone feels like that, like what you just described.
I know it's hard to keep up with everything, but like I felt like bad about it at some point where I'm like, God, because you're so funny in the movies, and I'm like, how can I not know almost anybody?
No,
it gets by me sometimes, and then when I realize it, I feel like I've even without saying it, I've insulted somebody. You know?
Well, no, I think you're cool because I think you treat everyone the same. You know what I mean? Like there's because you can see some people like turn when they find they're just they kind of shift it a little bit. Yeah.
Well, I think from doing this show, I've learned to do that. That you know, people are just people, and some of them are shitty, but they are just people.
Right. Right.
But you grew up in New York?
Grew up in Queens. Yeah.
Like what part of Queens?
Forest Hills.
So, like, I lived in Astoria for a while.
Oh, no way. Yeah, cool.
And Queens is its own world.
It is.
And I don't, like, have... Do you still have family there?
Yeah. Yeah, my dad still lives there.
Oh, your dad?
Yeah, my grandma lives, like, in Great Neck, which is really close to Queens.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Great Neck's, like, kind of, like, that's on the island, correct?
Yeah, the old Great Gatsby, East and West Egg.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
And when I was growing up, it used to be kind of Jewy. I don't know if it is anymore. Because as a Jew, I knew that people... Isn't it one of the five towns or is it not? They're the five towns in Long Island that were like, you know, predominantly Jewish for a while. But I don't think they are anymore. I don't know what's going on out there.
Did you grow up in New York?
I grew up in New Mexico.
Oh, cool.
But the family's from Jersey. Had cousins out there in Long Island. And I always felt very connected to New York.
Yeah.
Do you feel a specific connection? I always feel like some people are in New York, some people aren't.
I feel definitely a connection, but you know, not to just like Times Square. You know what I mean? Like,
it's
a deep connection for like, you know, the kind of the off route.
Sure.
Like,
Queens has its own thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when I was in Astoria, it was, like, astounding what was going on there culturally.
Yeah.
I mean, I had no idea from block to block, you're like, where am I? What is happening?
Totally.
Why are whole family shopping for vegetables at 3 a.m.? How does that fucking happen?
Why is there a short film contest at, you know, the bar right across, you know?
Yeah. Who's over there?
Yeah.
Has it gotten hip? I don't think it got hip.
It's pretty hip.
Astoria
is lit. Yeah.
It's happening?
Yeah. It's been happening. You know, the Steinway and 36th Street, right?
Yeah, but I missed it. I was at Steinway and like 30th Avenue and it was not happening.
Oh, really? You were on Steinway?
I was on 37th Street and 30th Avenue. So it was like one block down from Steinway.
Oh, that's cool.
Or two.
Did you go to the Museum of the Moving Image a lot?
Of course.
That place is
but
great.
Then like you go left on Steinway, it's all Egyptian. And then you go right.
The hookah bars. Yeah.
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 And then like you go a little deeper into Queens, it's like Jamaican and Dominican and then like Asian and Indian. It's crazy.
It is.
What was your neighborhood like?
My neighborhood was actually like predominantly Jewish, actually, to the point where when I was like 11, I met like maybe a little
Jew?
Bit younger. No, yeah. I met her for my first like not Jewish person, right? And I remember being like arguing with her a little bit, and I was like, yeah, right. I mean, obviously everyone's Jewish, like you know, if you're white. And she was like, not Jewish. It was like ridiculous. I was like, okay, racist. But yeah, it was predominantly Jewish, and then I guess it became more Asian over the years. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it Orthodox or just regular Jews?
You know, I had Orthodox neighbors in my building, but then, you know, Gentiles as well.
Yeah. But I think that's like the interesting thing about New York is that like you do have entire global civilization all within one building.
A 1,000%.
And everybody's always on top of each other. There's people all around. And the way it gets judged is that like it must be horrible. No, it's great.
Yeah.
It's
no,
fucking
it's
great.
It's awesome.
So what was it like? How'd you grow up? How many people in the house?
So my mom passed away when I was four, and then I lived with my dad for a little bit, but then it was hard for him to be a single dad and working.
Yeah.
So I lived with my grandma. My grandma had a restaurant in Long Island that went bankrupt, and then she had to move like from this big house to like an apartment essentially in the building that my dad lived in.
Yeah, yeah.
And she had a one bedroom, so it was me, her, my grandpa, in like a one bedroom apartment.
And do you have memories of your mom at all?
Weird like silhouettes, if you will, like vignettes of it, yeah.
That's
like,
crazy.
Just weird moments.
Yeah,
I remember like some nights really specifically. I remember one night really specifically, and like
what happened?
I like couldn't go to sleep, and she was showing me like I was obsessed with Gorillas in the Mist.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was young, when I was like a baby, I could not stop watching it. So she showed me like The Wizard of Oz, and I remember being like cranky because I was sleepy. But,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Oh, it's kind of amazing. you know, how the memory works, and then like how have you seen a lot of pictures of her and stuff?
Yeah.
So it, does it kind of like it, it's hard to integrate like what's your memory and what is just like from after?
Yeah, for sure. I actually went to Korea recently on this.
She was Korean?
She was Korean. She was like an immigrant from Korea. She came for like art school.
Oh wow.
I was doing a Antony's show, No Tastes Like Home, and you get to meet. It's kind of like a, you know, back to your roots kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I got to see pictures of her from like grade school because they found her like high school friends. I'd never seen her at that age, and she looked like a lot like me. And I was sitting with her two friends who didn't speak English.
Yeah.
And the translator, and I was like, oh wow, and they were like, you look like her. We're all crying.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, they were like, you look like her, and I was like, oh yeah, no, and then. The one of them was like, she was like prettier though. And then I was like, and then I went to the translator. I was like, the translator like said it to me, and I was like, oh, that, you know, because you, they probably say that because like she's dead, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then
sure.
And then it's like, no, they don't say that. Like she, you
no,
know,
she's definitely prettier than you.
Yeah, yeah. They're
so
like, yeah.
You like went to her hometown?
I did.
In South
yeah.
Korea?
Yeah, yeah. It was just a really intense experience though, because those shows are usually like, you know, someone like finding out like that their family came into Ellis Island
yeah.
years ago, but
right.
this was like my mom.
Yeah.
So it felt like a couple generations too close. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not like finding your roots where you just sit there and he has a book.
Yeah.
And
no.
You go.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a book involved. I guess they always need a book.
And they give you the book and then you have it.
There was a record of my, there's a, like, certain families in Korea, they keep a record
yeah.
of like everyone that got married, and ours goes back like to the 1500s.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it goes back to it's like crazy. But then when it got to my mom's generation, she was one of seven, and they had written her out of the book because she moved to America and married a Chinese guy.
And that was like a taboo. That was like a no-no.
That was a big no-no. Yeah, that was a big yeah.
And she went, and what kind of art she do?
She made like huge paintings that were really like tortured 70s colors of naked women running away. all kinds of naked women.
Running in flight.
Totally. Yeah, there's one where I'm just like, what? As a child, I was like, what the fuck is this? You know
no
what
kidding.
I mean? Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't hinged to any kind of traditional art. She was really a modern painter.
Yeah, in Korea, they just, at that time, her story was that they just want you to be able to replicate anything and draw with
yeah.
precision.
Yeah.
And I guess like the Abex movement was happening in the United States
yeah.
and she loved like Susanna Rothenberg is one of her favorite
artists. Oh,
the
horses.
Yeah, the fragmented horses.
Yeah,
that was her favorite artist.
Oh,
so, like,
she was great.
Yeah, dude. Oh my God.
I wonder what happened to her.
I think she passed.
Did she?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I remember seeing those at the Whitney or something, or it was in one of the biennials. I really dug her stuff.
Yeah,
and that was your mom's person, huh?
Yeah, yeah. She was like obsessed. So I think she wanted to do more abstract
and
stuff.
And that's why she left Korea.
Yeah, she wanted to do art school in the United States. Yeah,
that's so fucking good. It's not the general Asian tale I hear of people's upbringing.
Oh, not at all.
It's
not
usually
at all.
Like they just expected so much. There was nothing I could do to please them.
No, it's so true. It's so true. Yeah.
Oh, you got off easy in a way. I'm yeah. sorry she passed away, but
oh, no, that's okay.
At least the history is like this, you know, abstract artist and not like a disappointed person.
Yeah, no, it sounds like something like ChatGPT wrote or something.
Oh,
it's
my
not,
God.
Yeah.
Do you have any of her paintings?
I do. We have all of them. Yeah.
And they're huge?
Yeah, they're massive. They're huge. And you know, those kind of like 70s greens and oranges.
Sure. Have you put together a show of her stuff?
You know, I it's so weird because my dad, like, I guess met someone at his work and they,
yeah.
you know, they know he's my dad.
Yeah.
And this woman came up to him and was like, we should do an art show of your mom's stuff. And he told me about that because my mom really trusted him with, like, keeping the art preserved. And
your dad?
My dad. So,
yeah.
like, my dad has taken such good care of them, like,
oh,
over
yeah.
these years. He doesn't take care of literally anything.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so he was approached by this coworker who was like, I want to put on an art show of your wife's art paintings. And my reaction at that time, because I didn't understand art to that level
yeah.
yet, I was like, I was like, Dad, that's so exploitative. Like, why? Like, why would you do that? Like, that is, what are you gonna like sell mom's art for what? Like $35? Like, and where the fuck am I gonna do this? Like,
you didn't understand.
We're gonna go to Flushing Meadow. Like, where are we gonna do this? And I was so angry at him. And then I.
How old were you then?
This was probably, maybe like 6 or 7 years ago.
Oh, really?
Like that. Yeah. And so, like, and then I met someone in, like, the art world, and we became friends. We kind of dated.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that, like, basically I learned that art is, like, all artists wanted is their art to be seen.
Be seen, yeah.
They don't want it locked up in a cooling storage.
Sure.
Somewhere. And when I realized that, I felt bad. And so, I was like, I'm sorry, Dad, I... screamed at you and took you to court, you know?
You took him to court?
No.
That's so, like, impressive in a way, because my mom was a painter, too.
And oh, no those, way.
Yeah, but, you know, they toil away, and, you know, they never reach the point where they want to reach, and your mom passed away, and my mom just sort of gave it up. But there's all these really kind of, visceral and aggressive, attempts to express yourself, and they just exist in the world. And, you know, what do you do with it? So are you going to do a show?
I mean, why not?
Find a space.
I've talked to some people about it. Sandra Oh is like a really good friend.
Oh, yeah. She's great.
Yeah. She set me up with a person that she.
I mean, you don't have to sell them.
Yeah.
You can just have someone look at them.
Yeah, that's all I want. That's all I want is it to be seen. I think that would be, like, really cool.
Yeah, and you could, like, it's an interesting kind of community thing, too. I mean, like, because how many, like, Asian modern art painters, there's a lot of them now, but it seemed like she was sort of at the cutting edge of it, or what, maybe.
Yeah, it was so unexpected, I think, now being an Asian woman, understanding kind of, like, what those kind of, like, models for what what those are.
Yeah.
Like, and what she was painting, I remember when I was young, she'd bring, like kind of like busty, models.
Oh,
and
really?
My dad would have to take me to the park because they're just naked, you know.
Probably for his, himself.
Yeah,
too.
He was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I should go. He had binoculars and the, yeah, no.
What'd your dad do?
He did IT.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And what kind of restaurant did your grandma have?
My great grandpa opened, it's like the first Chinese restaurant in Flushing, basically.
Really?
And that was a big institution. Yeah. If you have family that still lives there that was alive in like the 70s, they definitely went. Yeah.
What was it called?
Lums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was the place?
It was happening, dude. Was the, like, Mets went there all the time. Yeah.
So it was like high end.
Yeah, high end. It was more experiential, like a Benihana, but Chinese. You know, like they had an Arhu player when you walk in, something like that. Yeah.
So he was like a predecessor to Mr. Chow.
No, I think Mr. Chow was like his own. Mr. Chow was like Mr. Chow. Yeah, yeah. This was like but yeah. And then my grandma started one in a strip mall in Long Island that went bankrupt. So
was it good though?
It was all right. It was probably all right. It's all the same shit. Yeah,
so,
I don't know.
Do you feel like, your drive to get into the arts was directly relative to your mom?
I mean, I think that it might have given me the idea that that is a viable.
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah. I mean, to be an artist, like what she was doing, it takes a degree of entitlement too. It's like, it's so,
and risk, right?
It's total risk. Yeah. But it's like, it's one of those bets that no one's gonna really support you in your life, right? Your spouse, your family.
She had to run from Korea.
Yeah. And that must have been scary to end up with my dad, who's great, but like, very neurodivergent, and I think that she definitely missed home a lot.
How'd she end up with him?
She was like a cool like art student from South Korea, a bit older than my dad.
Where'd she go?
They met at New Pulse, SUNY New Pulse.
Oh, yeah.
So my dad was like, my dad was like obsessed with her and younger and yeah.
She was younger?
He was younger.
Oh, really? And he is obsessed. Well, I mean, if you're obsessed and you're not dangerous and you're persistent, sometimes... It delivers.
No, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You can annoy somebody into loving you eventually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Can you still in 2025?
I think so. I think people are still wired the same way. There's different ways to do it. I don't think you can do it online so much because then it's just creepy.
Right.
But I think when people are in love with people, and the other person isn't quite sure about it, they keep showing up. Sometimes it works out.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Because maybe I am in love with you. I just don't know it. So thank you for selling me on it.
There are people that if you don't keep showing up, they literally forget about you.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to, and maybe that's the fear of what, and then it prompts people to anxiously show up for all the time. Yeah.
So has he just been like kind of a heartbroken guy the whole time?
He definitely was for years. Yeah. I would wake up and he'd be listening to REM.
Oh,
like
wow.
On the floor with the socks on the headphones. And I'd be like, Dad, come on.
REM.
It's like, why you gotta listen to REM out of all, you know? Yeah.
Just wanted to be in the sadness.
Yeah. I was like, they make singles on vinyl. Everybody hurts them. It's like, what are you just rewinding to that song constantly? Like, what's going on? Yeah.
And do you have siblings or no?
Only child. Yeah.
How was that?
Man, it was lonesome, dude. You see some shit as an only child. You really,
I've poked at only children a lot. Like,
yeah. What do you say about them?
But I'm always wrong, because like my theory on it was like, if you're only child, it's a lot of pressure because there's no other siblings.
Yeah,
that you've got to like really show up and you know, not disappoint your parents and not die and you know.
It's crazy. I really never cared about disappointing my parents in that way. Yeah. I felt like it was just kind of sad. But then I didn't want siblings either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you see when you say you see some shit? What do you mean?
You just see all kinds of you know, people playing mahjong in a laundromat because you know. And I don't know, I feel like in New York, it was always like a bloody shoe somewhere. You know what I mean? And like, you had no one really to say ill with. You know what I mean?
So like, you just had to take it?
You just internalize it. You're just like, oh, that's a disgusting pigeon that was completely run over. And yeah.
No one to kind of like have, like, well, I guess when you have siblings at a certain age, you can always kind of, you know, have them, whether they're beating you up or not, you can at least commiserate.
Yeah. And when you think about like just like what your body is going through when you're a kid and raised by my grandma, like literally she'd be like she would like give me witch hazel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and she's like, you got to use this witch hazel. And I'm like, why?
Yeah. For what was that for?
I think just like for all kinds of, I don't know what it's for, but yeah, you put it on your body and stuff.
Yeah. So there's a generational difference and she was also had a cultural specificity about her things.
Yeah. She worked in the exchange cart unit and just stole all the all the supplies. So she had, you know, the horrible things.
but you got along with her.
Oh, I love my grandma. She's my best friend, dude. Yeah.
Your grandmother?
Yeah, but it's really sad. She's like getting old now, so it's hard. Yeah,
and to show up, you know, and fill that void, that must have been like a big deal. And
yeah.
What did she and did she? Were they always supportive of the creative, kind of focus you had?
My dad was so like. Let down that I, or you know what, not even let down, just angry that I would like really think that like a career in music at that time would work.
Yeah.
And he signed me up for all these government services that give you the job listings. Like he really wanted me to be a meat inspector, a sonogram technician, or a tower control people.
Air traffic?
An air traffic control, yeah, because they make a lot of money in the entrance fee. So he kept sending me, like spamming with all this stuff. But my grandma, like, when I was like, I loved musicals when I was like 13, she would bring me to music lessons. Like, she never supported. Yeah.
Thank God you had a lifesaver.
I know, literally, because the air traffic controllers.
It's weird. My grandfather was like that with civil service. He's like, you know, you should get a job at the post office. benefits.
Right. Oh, yeah, like, that's true.
That was usually their whole thing was this security thing.
Right.
So they find these angles, and for some reason, they always went to the government, and it's like, I don't want to.
Like, you got to work for the city. Yeah. Like, you want to uncrack it? Work for the,
Yeah, because they think that you're going to get this package where you're going to have benefits for the rest of your life. I can't even imagine. It's a very working class state of mind. It's
yeah,
not
I guess
bad.
So. You're right. You're right.
You know, but I think they're well intended. But Jesus, open your mind a little bit.
Yeah.
So it was music at first.
I mean, honestly, it was. I mean, I always liked doing like funny stuff. Then at that time, I was making music, other music, like therapeutically. I got into music. I went to high school for the trumpet. And then, like,
did you go to that fancy one?
Yeah, LaGuardia.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can you still play?
Yeah, but you don't want to, right? No. Because your neighbors know, and you don't want them, it's, you know, your
but
silver
bells.
Were
you like a jazz person?
No, not necessarily. I just played super loud, and I, like, my band teacher loved me, so when we did, like, Live in La Vida Loca, like, I was always first chair, and, like, really. Jazz is harder, a little bit.
So when you went to, what's it called, LaGuardia?
LaGuardia, yeah.
Yeah, the Fame School?
Yeah.
I mean, most people, including myself, only know it, you know, from the movie.
Yeah.
But I imagine that must have been a mind-opening experience.
That was really crazy. To go from, like, you know, the public school system in Queens to like, literally going to, like, Lincoln Center every single day.
Great, right?
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. It was intimidating for sure.
Why?
Because all the, you know, you're passing Juilliard on the way to school. I'm taking the one train at, like, 13. It's like, yeah.
A lot of pressure.
Yeah, everyone's smoking cigarettes after they come out and stuff. It was, and everyone's, like, so cool because they're all, like, fashion people. Yeah.
And they already know at that age that they want to be in the arts. So I just, like, because art kids are always the best. I mean, you must have been, like, you know, influenced by people there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
What did you start to, like, get into?
I think that was when I got into, you know, I think, I feel like a lot, like, it was the kind of, like, all the guys were obsessed with, like, underground hip hop, like, atmosphere.
Yeah.
So I started to really get into, like, kind of indie hip hop.
Indie hip hop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess what else did I get into? I guess, like, cutting class. Constantly, and not so much weed.
Yeah. Who are your other artist influences?
Like musicians?
Anything. Writers.
Artists. This is going to sound... I love, like Anais Nin.
Yeah.
I love Mark Manson.
Yeah.
Which is, like, no one wants to hear that.
What does he do? I don't know him.
He does that book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Have you...
No, I heard of it.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, he has some bangers in there, though. People don't...
Is it like a philosophy text?
It's like a hard... It's like a crass, like... self-help book for men or for whoever, but
and you took some
he has this whole thing about, like, your greatest joy will also give you the greatest pain, so they kind of go hand in hand, you know what I mean?
Yeah
I love that
that's
shit.
True, right?
It's so true
oh my god
yeah,
joy, that's evasive.
Yeah, I hate joy. Yeah, joy sucks, really.
I question it at all times.
But that's why it's the worst. It is kind of like the worst emotion. I feel like Brene Brown said something like that. Joy is, and it's, you know, I always thought that was an Asian thing, because joy is the signal that something horrible is going to happen immediately. Like,
that's part of the Asian philosophy?
Yeah. That was, it's actually a saying.
That's good. I'm glad I avoided at all costs the joy.
Why?
I don't know. I don't really know if I can identify it. I do have moments where I feel at peace a bit, you know? And I think, like last night, even when I was playing music, I guess that there was some joy there because I was nailing it.
Yeah.
And I don't usually nail it. But I guess, because it's not my primary thing. Like, I play, but now I've started over the last couple of years to play with people, and that's a whole other thing, and to, you know, to kind of work as a group and stuff.
Sure.
And there were just, like, moments last night where I'm like, this is good.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's as close as you get to joy as a creative person. It's like, hey, I'm doing it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, literally.
What? Do you have joy?
The definition of joy, I think, changes, right? Like,
I don't know.
I think, like, you're an amazing musician. I know you're an amazing guitarist. Yeah.
I'm okay.
But, like, of course you're going to, like, feel joy in those moments.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily, like, it's funny where you derive joy from.
The idea of, like, you know, pursuing joy, it's just like, how do you even fucking do that? And you can't live in it. It's like happiness. I don't know. I think I'm at an age where all these questions are becoming kind of pressing as I get older. It's sort of like, dude, you're running out of time. You better get that happy thing going.
No, you're not running out. You're just getting started.
The person that said when we're going to fly on a private plane on Saturday, like, they go down all the time.
They do.
Like, you know,
I brought it up again today.
I've never been on a private plane, and we're going to go down to Comic-Con for the bad guys. You're like, oh, man. They go down all the time.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's a lovely like convenience and privilege when you get to especially ride with, you know, a lot of like your, you know, it's being kind of.
Who's to go? Is everyone going?
Yeah. 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 I think so.
We're all going to be on that plane.
I think so. Well, you know, we don't have too many bags on.
And I'm not going to bring a bag. We're going for like a few hours.
Yeah. Well,
it's crazy.
Yeah. It'll be fun though.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it. So, so you never really pursued the trumpet as the thing?
No, I feel like, and there was a part of me that would be like, you know, like my like holy grail would be making it to like the pit of the Lion King, but that would never happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was really about musicals.
I love musicals. I like being able to do so, like what you were saying about the guitar. I like being able to just like play.
Yeah.
That was always fun. And even in an ensemble with everyone out in a band.
It's yeah, like, yeah.
That always gave me joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when does the shift happen to where you start doing the other thing, the funny business? And I guess it started musically, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think after a while, you know, because you're the best trumpet player in your middle school, and then when you go to high school, you're like the 50th best trumpet player in the school.
Well, especially at an arts high school.
Yeah, 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 no, for sure. And I think that I started to kind of resent like the arts being like the academia. Like you don't want to. I felt like it was weird to take something that felt so like personal and like really just. Like there's a lot of material there and it's me. It's like my soul.
Yeah.
And then putting it into a book and then being tested on it. I felt like it was just an impossible medium.
Yeah.
And so like I started to feel less like it was personal. I felt like I was just trying to compete with people I'll never be able to be better than.
Right.
And then I just started like messing around with GarageBand when it first came out. Like when you go to college, everyone gets like a MacBook or something.
Yeah.
I started doing that, and I remember when I was first making songs, I was like, it is going to take me, like, 15 years for these to actually sound good.
Yeah.
And normal.
Yeah.
But I still, like, obsessively do that, and then, yeah, and I was like, because I'm a serious person, but then I also, like, I like writing, I like being comedic, too.
Yeah.
And so when that music, I made that song, and then, like, 3 years later, a guy that I knew said, like, we should make a music video out of it. Yeah.
Out of the My Vag song?
Yeah.
And that was based on another song?
My Dick.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
See, like, that stuff, I don't know. I don't know that world.
That's okay.
It seems like I should know My Dick. Like, yeah, that should be in my cultural repertoire.
Well, you do know quite a lot.
Yeah, I know, but, like, was that a big hit, My Dick?
It was a big hit. It was in that movie, I feel like it was Harold and Kumar.
Oh, okay.
You know who those guys are?
Yeah, I know who those guys are.
Okay, cool.
I don't know if I know, I don't know if I saw the movies, but I know who they are.
What's your favorite movie?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. There's a lot of them.
What's a movie that you can watch over
Michael,
and over?
Michael Clayton.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a
good movie.
It's a great movie. Yeah.
And I can watch, I have weird movies lately because I've gotten more sentimental.
Oh.
I don't know if they're great movies, but I can watch The Devil Wears Prada at any moment.
Really? I thought you were going to say like Advocate or something, and then ended with Where's.
That's a good one.
That's a great one. They're redoing it. Right.
Are
now.
They?
They're
oh, really?
They're shooting the sequel.
Yeah. There's certain movies where people who are heavy characters, when they do something light, I'm kind of impressed with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I rewatched The Fucking Intern the other day with De Niro and Anne Hathaway.
Oh yeah, that actually was a good one.
It's good.
It was really enjoyable.
To see De Niro kind of lock into something lighter.
Yeah,
and still bring all of his stuff to it.
Totally.
It's kind of great. I think what we're finding is that Anne Hathaway has an impact on me.
I think that sounds. Have you seen The Princess Diaries?
I have not.
Okay. All right.
But I'll watch the Scorsese movies whenever they're on.
Yeah.
And I watched Paris, Texas again recently. That I hadn't seen that.
Oh, yeah.
Since I was in high school.
Yeah, it's a banger too.
Yeah. And I realized I'd missed the entire plot of the movie.
that, I don't think that does that. That's not that hard. That's hard to do. Not that hard to do.
Well, it's weird because that movie, like when I went to high school, it seems like you're in the same boat. There were very grown up things that I really felt like I got. You know what I mean? Like I read somewhere that you're a Bukowski person.
Yeah, I love.
But like, when did you get turned on to that? How did that happen?
Like, my dad had a collection of his poetry, and he had books
in those.
Yeah, it was the poems first, and then it was like Factotum and.
Yeah,
and like, yeah. But his poems still get me, dude. Like, they're
so... Yeah. They're
and
so,
it was Notes of a Dirty Old Man. That's the book, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
The stories, like memoir things.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
And you were reading that as a kid? Your dad sounds like an interesting guy, despite the kind of nerdy, you know, way you presented him. I mean, between R.E.M. and Bukowski, that's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. No, he's cool. I started reading it then. It was just different than everything I read.
Well, the poetry is very straightforward.
Yeah, I love it.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he really paints a picture of, like, just a disgusting hotel downtown, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and it's all L.A. stuff, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there was one, the book I had was, what is it, Burning in Water, Drowning in Flame?
Mm-hmm.
It was a collection of poems,
and he
was on that press that made the really nice covers, you know, for a while. You know, all the books looked really cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It was always like a silhouette of like his like kind of face, at that kind of... like
that was on the notes of...
Oh,
the,
sorry.
That was that black and white,
you know, with
his like pockmarked face.
Looked like the cover of The Giver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, how could this not be great?
Right, totally.
So that must have blown your mind.
Anais Nin blew my mind, dude.
What about it?
I don't think I've ever read... That was my first, like, I guess, female... writer that like really went there.
Yeah.
And like I have now a book of her quotes, and she live, laugh, love, dude.
Yeah.
I also saw like Henry and June. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
When I was like really little.
Yeah. Fred Ward.
What is this?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good movie.
Yeah.
That guy made some. Was that a Kaufman movie? The same guy did The Right Stuff, I think. Like he was a pretty good director.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite movie?
Oh man.
You can't make one. It's a very hard, you know, because the Criterion Channel wants me to, or no, not Criterion.
The Closet? You're in the
Closet. No, I did that. But American Cinematheque out here wants me to host a movie.
Oh, cool.
So I made this list.
Yeah. What's on it?
McCabe and Mrs. Miller.
Okay.
Which I think is great.
Yeah.
And then also another Altman movie, Nashville, I thought would be great.
Oh, my God. Nashville is so good.
Right?
Nashville is so good.
It's just like for me, when I host those things, it's just the opportunity to see them on 35.
Yeah.
And, you know, have it really screened. The last time I did it last year, I did Dog Day Afternoon.
Oh, hell yeah.
And to see that on, you know, as a movie.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was great. And then I added a couple other ones, like some Denzel movies. I get a little obsessed with Denzel sometimes.
Which?
Well, Training Day.
Oh yeah.
It's great, but I'm not like I don't like these kind of movies necessarily, but I can watch The Equalizers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, I haven't seen that one.
I'm not like a John Wick guy or a Bourne guy or whatever, but Denzel, like, you know, full on Denzel when he can really do it.
Yeah.
It's the fucking best.
The Bone Collector and the Pelham thing that we were talking about the other day.
Taking a Pelham in the remake.
Yeah, dude.
Have you seen the original?
I have seen the original.
It's fucking great.
Yeah, it's so, that whole premise, it's kind of, in my opinion, like almost like a better Speed, if you will. It's
totally.
You know, because there's more stakes.
And Robert Shaw.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
The best.
Totally.
So you do My Vag, and then like what? Everything blows up?
No, it was kind of just like this weird, like it ended up on BuzzFeed, you know.
Yeah.
I was still working at a vegan bodega in Greenpoint.
Okay.
And so then I came out with another one called NYC Bitches.
Yeah.
And because I think people just thought it was gonna be one note. That one, that did well. And then I got cast in Girl Code, which is an MTV show. Yeah. And then from there, I didn't really have a manager. So I asked I was asking people for recommendations. And I think like a lot of comedians, especially at that time for that show, they don't like to really share their team, you know? And there was one guy that kind of represented all the girls, and they were all huge stars. I was like, I don't know if I want to go to him. But Annie Letterman, do you know Annie Letterman?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So she was on the show with me, and she was like she really did me a solid. She was like, you should talk to my manager. I think he can help you.
Oh, really?
And I'm still with him today.
Who's that?
His name's Itai Rice. Yeah.
Annie Letterman. Yeah, I see her all the time.
I know Annie, like, is that, that's my girl. You know,
she's the best.
Yeah, she is literally the, I was telling you the other day, it's like Annie's like literally the best. She's so cool. She's so deep. But I feel like I've seen multiple scenarios where she's just being chased out of a hall by like five girls. They're like, what the fuck, Annie? Like, why would you say that? Because she has no
no filter.
She has no filter, but she's one of the funniest people I've literally ever met. Ever.
Yeah, I met her she opened for me like in Philly. And
oh,
I think
no
she's
way.
From there, right?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, so we were driving, and her mom had some kind of business, and we were driving around her mom's business car, and it had, I can't remember what it was. It was something, not eBay, but something in that zone. And I really took a liking to her, and I helped her get in the Comedy Store out here. So I see her all the time.
Cool.
I just did her podcast recently.
No way. Yeah, yeah.
Did you guys still hang out?
I saw her a couple days ago.
Yeah. She is like one of those people where you're like, oh, here it comes.
No, totally.
What am I going to get?
Totally. She always says something you can't even be offended because it's like, that was so good. And yeah.
Yeah, just the sort of like intense lack of boundaries.
Totally. And then the ability to laugh at herself, which I think is really important.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah. Now, wait, so when did you change your name from Nora to Awkwafina?
In high school, technically, before the music video came out.
How is that like a thing that one does in high school, change your name?
Well, legally? No, it wasn't just,
no,
it was,
I mean,
like a
just
moniker.
Like,
I was awkward and fine. It means, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it was based on, you know, how things are presented?
Like, imagine meeting someone named Neutrogena.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, you know
you
she was
know
like,
what she's up.
She was really pretty in high school. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it just stuck?
Yeah.
But do your friends call you Nora?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's not, is it like an alter ego or just a name?
I think it used to be for, I think, like, the narrative that was, like, being asked, like, everyone always asked if it was that. But now I can see it for what it is. It's And we're the same. It's
yeah,
the same.
Yeah. It's just a name, and it's unique.
Yeah.
And it's singular. It's one name.
Yeah, it's one name. People really don't know what is on the other side of that name, but yeah.
So what happens once he gets a manager?
I got a manager. He like kind of sorted out stuff with like that time I was kind of, it was the beginning days of like when I started, like the idea of my show started to, you know, kind of be.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I, you know, he asked me like, what do you want to do? And I was like, yeah, I would love to, I like want to be in movies. So we've got auditions and stuff like that.
Yeah. And the show went on for a long time. Where'd you put that show up? How'd that work?
It was Comedy Central. So,
oh,
yeah.
The Girl from Queens one?
Yeah.
And that lasted for how many seasons?
Three.
So like 30 episodes or more?
I think the third one we had about like seven or eight, maybe a couple less.
And that was a hit?
I don't know if it was a hit. We did well. Some of the what are those things called? The numbers.
Yeah. The ratings.
Yeah. That was cool. I don't know. I mean, I always really appreciate people that like I've actually watched it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but it must have been like at the time. What year was that?
2019.
Oh, really?
Yeah, maybe even before. I think we filmed the first one in like around the time I filmed The Farewell.
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah.
Oh, really? It's the same time.
Yeah. Because it took so long for it to be greenlit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, but did you find that, you know, you built an audience of, I mean, because it seems like if you have a point of view and it is, you know, you're coming from somewhat of an Asian perspective, but just being an Asian person,
right.
That anytime there's representation, it's sort of like, oh, we have one.
Yeah.
And did you find that with your audience?
I mean, for sure. Because I think I also, you know, am not poised. You know what I mean? And so I think that if you're just like a kind of a, you know, just a kind of regular Asian girl that like it, that's awkward and.
And like crass in New York.
Yeah. And that too. Yeah. I think that was cool. I think just to see that there's a flavor of us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you never did stand up?
Never did stand up. No, I was intimidated by stand up.
Yeah, because I bet you could draw a crowd, huh?
Yeah, but I feel like at this point it would have to be some kind of like fringe festival, like
right. You'd have to do
like
a whole one man show,
one person show.
Yeah.
Elaine Stritch, something like that. Yeah. An Asian American Elaine Stritch. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's probably a good story there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You could do like, you know, Margaret Cho used to do it.
Margaret Cho. That's my, like, yeah, that was my representation, dude. I never seen an Asian woman on TV that spoke in an American accent.
Yeah.
Ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you know her comedy?
Yeah.
Yeah, because she gets pretty dirty.
She gets so dirty. And when she talks about her mom and stuff.
It's still, after all these years, and I've known her for many, her mom is still hilarious.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Isn't it? When she does her mom.
Yeah, and her dad.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my favorite ones of hers, like when her dad punched his friend or something. I don't remember, but it was really funny.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah.
So the farewell, I didn't realize happened so early on. I mean, like, well, it's after Crazy Rich Asian. You've done some stuff, but that was a deep part.
Yeah.
And didn't you got nominated for Golden Globe?
I won.
You won.
Yeah, yeah. You know what it was? It that filming experience felt like documentary.
Uh-huh.
It felt like it was me. I just had lines. And so there are other roles that might be emotional where, you know, maybe there was an Asian American nurse that like all, you know, that I have trouble with.
Oh, really?
It's really hard for me to
So it was really close to who you were.
It felt really natural to play like an Asian American girl that's negotiating between, you know, her family in China and her family in America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been to China?
Yeah. Yes.
Where'd you go?
We filmed that there. In Changchun, where her actual grandma lived. And then I was in Beijing. I did like my best friend was a Greek girl from that went to NYU.
Yeah.
And she was going to go in for a summer, and I went with her to Beijing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was there once.
Oh, yeah? Where?
Yeah. Right in Beijing.
Nice. What did you think about it?
It was, honestly?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as somebody, I obviously don't have roots there, but when I got there, it really felt like a different world.
Yes, 1,000%.
And at the time, the air quality was bad.
Yeah, yep.
And also, I noticed there's the things that made an impression on me, like there's so many different kinds of bicycle kind of vehicles around.
Yeah, for sure.
And people were like getting shaves and haircuts in the street. I noticed that.
Yeah.
And there were just markets with all kinds of weird animals. It was completely a culture shock. I had no idea.
The culture shock is so real when you're there, and even weirder when you come back, because what was like alien to you before now feels so familiar that when you come back to the United States and there's, it's really weird.
Yeah. And also, like, because I went out, I saw the Forbidden City.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Forbidden City is great. And yeah.
It's wild.
Sometimes a little scary in there with the statues. And
yeah. And, yeah. But I noticed maybe it was cause of the government now that it was a little dusty. the upkeep on it was not essentially great, I thought.
I actually remember that when I went there, I was like, this is a huge grounds. And then you see like one person with that hat.
Yeah.
And like it's like a broomstick with like three hairs on it.
Yeah.
And they're dusting. Just, yeah, no, that's true.
Like they're kind of like, well, we got to leave it. But, you know, we don't want it to take too much power. And I almost died on the Great Wall, actually.
The Great Wall is hard. It's a hard one.
Well, they had this like ride. It was literally a sled in a gutter where you could go up on it and you just get in it and you kind of just go. And I just did it and there was no safety precautions.
Like
or
alone?
No,
or
I was with another comic
because
we were doing comedy there. But you go on the thing alone. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to operate it. There was only one thing to slow it down. And as I was coming down at the bottom, they were yelling something, but it was in Chinese.
No.
And they were yelling for me to slow down, but I didn't know. I thought they were saying, go, go, go.
Oh, no.
And it just plowed into all these other families. And
no.
It was fucked up.
Like a bowling ball? Or were they on the same course and you just kind of like...
Well, I was coming into the bottom and there was like these two cars with this family getting out and I just slammed right into them. Thank God nothing happened, but it was memorable.
That imagery is crazy.
And I went to the place where Peking duck came from, but now it's Beijing duck, and that was pretty cool.
Beijing is Peking. It's the same.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I know,
okay,
but
okay,
they
yeah,
changed
yeah.
it. You know, they don't, you know, it's not called Peking duck.
Oh, yeah, Beijing
cow,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just like fat and pancakes.
It's the sauce. Yeah,
that's sweet sauce.
Yeah, that makes everything, yeah.
But did you have family there or no?
Yeah, I did. My grandma had like a cousin there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you see him?
I did. Yeah. I stayed with them for a little bit too. Oh. That was crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really sweet. They were really sweet.
Do you speak Chinese?
I not well.
No?
Like, I can understand a little bit. I could say a little bit.
But your parents didn't speak either in the house?
My dad doesn't really know it either. And my grandma just kind of spoke, like, shitty English to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and you didn't do any, you never did any acting training or anything?
No, yeah. Not at all.
It's just kind of...
I saw an acting coach once because I feel like my team or someone didn't really trust me that much to just go in like raw dog like that.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And but you were able to draw an emotional depth and, you know, and hold it. I mean, that's kind of hard, but I guess you had some chops. I mean, it's weird because I kind of learned on set too. You kind of figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked your show.
Oh,
dude.
Thank you very much.
I really liked it. I think I went a couple seasons deep,
too. Oh, thank you.
I know Nora, another girl named Nora that was on
Yeah. She played my girlfriend.
Yeah.
What's her last name again?
Zehetner.
Yeah. You know her?
Yeah.
How is she?
She's great.
Oh, good.
She's great.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
She was a little intense, but she did a good job. No. I love her. It was just because the character she was playing in my life, the real person, was, a bit much.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wow. So that was a real person.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Where's she at?
I don't know.
It's like in a ditch. I don't.
No.
No.
I've seen her. It was a difficult relationship, and I've seen her a couple times, not too long ago. But we're not in touch. But she's okay.
How do you show up in a relationship? Like I'm always interested about how stand-ups do that, or you know,
in what way show up?
Like who are you? What roles do you play? What things you do?
Well, you know,
are you an avoidant?
A little bit. Sometimes I think there was a period there where I was attracted to, I don't know if I'd call them toxic, but somewhat mentally unstable situations.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, you know, I think there's something about drama that, you know, keeps you hidden from real intimacy. And I think that, you know, you go through relationships like that, that seem passionate, but they're really just, you know, crazy. And in those, you don't have to risk much because you're just yelling or crying all the time.
Yeah, you keep more in, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't, but you're not sharing yourself.
Yeah, but you're just sharing these, like, raw emotions in reaction to things.
When do you think that starts to get old and impossible?
Well, it starts to get exhausting.
Right.
And in some situations, it can feel kind of dangerous.
Yeah, you're, like, bloated with cortisol. It's awful.
All the time.
Yeah, you jump scare all the time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and or else you're just shutting down.
Totally.
And you're just trying to, like, you know, make it work.
And then you get glimpses of, like, what your life would be like, you know, without something super toxic. And it seems so free, you know?
Yeah. But then, you know, 5 years later, you get out of it.
No, for sure. No, 15 years later, what I mean?
You see glimpses at, you know, 6 months in.
Yeah.
And then, like, a decade later, you're like, I'm going to get out of this.
I think next year I'm going to do that. Yeah.
Why?
Sure.
What about you?
I don't know. I think that certain people make you anxious and other people that make you avoidant.
Yeah.
I think it's a fine balance, I guess, of like...
Oh, it's such a nightmare being like a creative, anxious, you know, nutty person.
Yeah.
You know...
I think that it's also we're delusional because I think a part of us thinks that is actually like really fun to be with.
Yeah.
But no, there's nothing fun about
it. No, I'm getting old for that.
Yeah. Well...
Yeah. Are you in one now?
I mean, yeah, it's been, you know...
Been a while?
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's good. It's
good.
Are you in one now?
Yeah.
Is it good?
I'm doing what I can.
Yeah? What does that mean?
There's no drama.
Oh, because you don't, yeah. So how do you not have a drama situation?
Well, I've learned over the years that, you know, a lot of times you're reacting to things that aren't real. And a lot of times, you know, things are, you know, kind of triggered on purpose. So I've learned to kind of, you know, shut up sometimes. And, you know, if I'm feeling, you know, manipulated or insulted or that sensitivity is fine. But you can actually just go like, you know, that hurt my feelings as opposed to go fuck yourself.
What if you say that hurt my feelings and then they say go fuck yourself? What would you do?
Then you hurt my feelings twice, and then I'm going to retreat pretty heavy,
right?
And add that to the list of reasons I have to leave.
But then I won't. You know what I mean?
Not for a while.
It's a cycle.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's cool.
You hosted Saturday Night Live?
I did. Yeah, I did. Have you?
No.
What do you mean?
I'm not at that level.
Mark, are you fucking kidding me? Come on. Come on.
No, I never was. I don't think I have the cultural juice to do it. And I ended up interviewing Lorne and everything. And I auditioned for the show and I thought I'd get close. And I was obsessed with Lorne forever.
Oh, you auditioned for the show?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I didn't get on it. And then Lorne finally agreed to an interview. And we did over 2 days, this massive interview. And he explained to me the situation. And I got a sense.
Oh my God, I haven't listened to that.
Yeah. And I got a sense of who he was. And it was all kind of interesting. But
that's cool.
Yeah. I think I'd like to do it. There's a lot of things, I don't know if you experience this, that I really think I should do or should have done. But if I really think about it, I don't know if I was prepared to do it or whether I would do a good job at it. You just have things over time I've kind of realized my limitations in some way.
Well, you don't want them to also
hamper.
You don't want them to, cause you to not take...
No. I definitely take risks, but yeah. I don't... were you nervous about it?
SNL was it was a situation where the cast was I was fans of them for years.
Which cast?
It was Kate McKinnon, Cecily Strong, Mikey Day.
Oh, yeah. So not too long
Bowen
ago.
Was on it.
Oh,
Bowen,
yeah.
Bowen actually, I don't think was a performer on it yet. He was a writer.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it was a cool cast, and I was just I felt so inadequate. Because growing up, I used to love SNL, Mad TV.
Yeah.
I loved the Sherry O'Terry days. And I had dreamed about being on that stage, and I knew that it was not, I won't be that lucky to actually kill it.
Right.
I think that the opportunity, kind of the luck stopped there,
sure.
Right, or whatever. And I felt... I just felt like I didn't have the devices. I wasn't ready. And I was so also just completely it was hard for me to, I felt so nervous and self-conscious.
And how'd you do?
I mean, I think some people said it's a good episode. I mean, every time
feel?
I watch it, I'm miming notes in my head. I'm turn around. And I don't know. I don't ever... Well, I can't watch things and think I truly killed that. Do you?
I mean,
you were killing the guitar yesterday, dude.
I felt that then, and recently I watched some old clips of stuff of my acting from way back in small parts, and I was pretty hard on myself at the time, but I think I did okay.
Yeah.
I think when it builds up to it, and then you finally see it, or you finally do it.
Yeah.
There, if you're of a certain type of person, there's no way you're going to feel good about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then, if you watch it later, you're like, "I was all right."
Yeah,
I did the best I could.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but it's very hard. Do you watch yourself in everything? Because in the Rich Asians thing, you were hilarious.
Thank you.
You must have felt like you nailed that.
I mean, that one that just felt fun. There was no I felt I think it's also if you feel comfortable around the director too,
yeah,
you can
totally.
See when you're stilted and stuff like that.
Sure,
I guess.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can. I'm not one of those people that can't watch themselves because I can watch it, have an objective opinion. It always leads to more self-hatred. But
right. So it's not objective. It's very subjective. You're watching
subjective.
You.
It starts
you think
subjective.
You can be objective, but how the fuck can you be objective about watching yourself?
I know.
And then when you're in a movie, you're trying to watch a movie, but then all you're focusing on is you.
And not only you, but something on your face. And you're just
dude,
what,
all
what
the fucking
even
time.
Is that?
Yeah, it's close your mouth.
Yeah, I know.
What are you doing with your hand?
I know.
You stupid.
You ever see what your other hand's doing when you eat?
Oh, my God.
It's crazy.
Well, you'd never think about that. And you shouldn't think about when you're acting.
Doing crazy shit, dude. It's so bad. I'm more unattracted to myself. It's always doing some weird shit. Yeah,
yeah, but no one, God forbid anyone notices it, and we're going to notice it. But even with this show I'm in now, this stick show on Apple with Owen, I think I did good with what I had to do.
You're a great actor.
Well, I appreciate that. But there are those moments, because when you're watching it, you go back to the moment you did it. In the last episode of Stick, which was just on last night.
Oh, cool.
It's a big finale and everybody's got to hug each other, on the golf course. And that day, Owen was so sick.
And
I don't know if he had COVID. I don't know what he had.
Oh, no.
But in those scenes, and I'm watching him, all I'm thinking is hold your breath, dude.
Oh, man.
Because I don't want to fucking get sick.
Oh, no. Dude, that's actually so true. You sometimes the day speaks louder than your performance. It's just like, I'm so tired. That, yeah, to you.
Yeah.
To you, yeah.
Yeah, and I watched Owen, too, and I'm like, he's doing great. And he was like, you know, sweaty and not, you know, it was not a good day.
Yeah,
and I swear
rough.
To God, in the group hug, I was holding my fucking breath because I did not want to get sick.
And that, I don't even know if that is if that's effective at that point in a hug. You know
I mean? Know, of course it's not, but it all played fine.
Yeah, totally.
But I knew that day. But I guess that's a testament to being an okay actor if you can pull it off.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah,
yeah the hands and the way I stand and my choices. You know, what are you gonna do?
Like in real life, or
no? And when I watch myself, I'm like, you could, why didn't you put a little more into this or that?
Yeah, I'm giving myself notes. Yeah.
Yeah, but people like it, and when they say they like it, I've chosen to believe them.
I think the one thing that sucks about, you know, like in this career is like you literally don't know who is lying sometimes.
Yeah, but if it's just generally, are you on? You're not on social media anymore.
Only I'm like Instagram, TikTok,
So the Instagram thing, like if people email me, if people go out of their way to say, I really like this, generally, you know, I'm like, okay, well, that's who it's for. Mm. I'm going to let it be. But then, you know, out of 10 of those, there's the one like, oh, you suck. And you're like, oh, I knew it.
Are we talking about like little clips or?
Well, it's just in shows. Like tend to reach out, and I shouldn't be, I'm not fully immersed in that, but I'll read stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that. But then you start to realize like, well, they went out of their way.
Yeah.
To write. So that's good.
Yeah.
You know, and I know I did the best I could. So that's that.
Yeah.
But you want to learn too. You want to learn how to make different decisions. Like, I think it is helpful to watch yourself.
Yeah.
To say like, well, you know, pay attention to that next time. So what are you working on now?
Right now I'm actually, the bad guys thing.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's press. I'm filming an Apple show right now about it's a docuseries about my great grandpa's restaurant.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. So you're going to produce it?
I'm like basically hosting it and I'm producing it. Yeah.
And so you're digging into the history?
Digging into the history. You know, there's not much that was left of my great-grandpa's lums. So they found a bunch of, like, customers and stuff.
Yeah.
It's been really cool.
Is there any, like, napkins or that kind of stuff from any of it? You know,
like matchboxes that you can get on eBay and Ashtray I have.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And how far into it are you?
We did about halfway, I guess.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And are you learning things?
I'm learning how to cook, which is
okay.
Yeah, I learned how to walk
from their menu.
Yeah, yeah. Then it got like roasted by everyone. Like the old customers were like, "Yeah, the original one was better and bigger." You know, yeah, it's cool. Do you cook at all?
Yeah, I do. I do cook, and I've been like plant based for like 2 years.
Oh wow!
So it's very specific, but I like it.
Yeah.
It makes you feel like you have some control over, you know,
you
your basic
beyond
life.
Beyond burgers or?
No, I'll cook like, you know, a lot of chickpeas, rice.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I do a lot of seaweed for some reason because I think that's important.
Oh, yeah.
I've decided.
Seaweed's great.
Yeah. And, you know, different types of proteins.
Mm-hmm.
Seitan.
Love
that
seitan.
Stuff. I do too.
Yeah. It's good.
And I think it's been around for thousands of years.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't do like the vegan cheese, some vegan cheeses.
Yeah. I don't know what it's made out of. It just feels like congealed oil.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that's what it is.
It's like a butter. Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
Do you have any big acting roles coming up?
There's stuff like that is kind of like
almost
in development.
Yeah.
But.
And you're officially a part of the Marvel Universe?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're doing
it's
all
cool.
right.
You could be in the Marvel Universe just by being in a Marvel movie. So that's fun. Yeah. And,
but to some people, that's very important.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah.
It's
right.
a good time. You're having a good time.
I love that. I love Marvel.
You do?
Yeah. It's like filming with them is very utopic.
Yeah.
You know, we finish on time, great food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that's a very important thing on set.
Food. Yeah, food.
I know.
When we were filming, was so good.
But when you have like a shitty caterer, you're like,
yeah.
And sometimes you don't even know what's like. It seems like it's healthy, and then you're like, why did I put on 9 pounds? I've been eating green beans the whole time.
I've been eating nerds and green beans. I live with the crafty and the catering. Yeah. Kind of like bump heads.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because I've been on a couple sets where the crafty is like, you know, this is better. Like, you know, this is better than a catering.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah, it's like take a quarter of a sandwich. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. Sometimes it is.
Yeah.
Well, it was great talking to you.
Great talking to you, Mark. Thanks for having
me. It was fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. That was us getting to know each other. It's she's an interesting person. Bad Guys 2, again, is in theaters tomorrow, August 1st. Hang out for a minute, folks.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, people, my special, Marc Maron Panicked, premieres on HBO tomorrow, streaming on HBO Max. You can hear me talk about how the special went on a full Maron bonus episode from back in May.
Like, I get off and there's this weird feeling of, like, embarrassment. Like, why do I even share that part of myself, you know, in certain bits? You know, why is that the only place I can go? There's a feeling of exposure that's uncomfortable, and I don't know how else to do it. And
you
I know,
still feel that with this material, even after you did it so many times?
Sure. I did, you know, in terms of knowing that it's now going to be, you know, you're almost anonymous out there in Portsmouth or Skokie,
right?
You know, or wherever. You know, you go out and do a theater in a town, it's like, they, you know, that show ends there.
Right. But this was the official coming out party of the babysitter bit, basically.
That's right. Yeah. And I don't know if that one, does that one embarrass me? I don't know. It's just the way I do it. You know, there's a vulnerability to it and a feeling of exposure that, you know, once I know it's going to be there for, you know, everyone to find and out there for, I would assume, the biggest audience that will ever see it collectively. You know, I feel like, you know, like, ugh, what, you know, why do I owe my audience this, or why do I do this to myself? I don't know where else to draw from, you know, that babysitter bit sort of evolved out of, you know, knowing that trauma therapy was, you know, a thing, and that I had done it in dealing with Lynn and some other stuff. And that story, it was funny because I saw my brother afterwards. I said, "You okay with everything now that it's done?" And I didn't okay any of it.
Now that you have no recourse.
To get that episode and every bonus episode we do twice a week, sign up for the full Maron. Just go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. And because I'm out of town, we usually do something from the vault, but I'm actually going to share with you the theme for my HBO special, Marc Maron Panicked, premiering tomorrow on HBO and HBO Max. I recorded this with Luke Paquin, Dan Horn, Richard Gowan. It was produced by Paige Stark, and we got a riff going.